think the quiz was more complicated than the Hare Krishna's talk. Today we're going to talk about Sadachar. This has been strategically placed the morning after the quiz. Sadachar, good behavior, good qualities. Character that will allow one to enter into the spiritual secrets of bhakti. And then in the coming days we'll explore other things all leading to rasa. Yes, so today we're going to speak about sadachar. Okay. I'm just going to begin by asking all of you a question. Think of someone you look up to. By the way, there's nothing to do with height. It's not a fixed question. Someone you look up to in terms of who you are inspired by, someone who you feel, wow, I learned so much from them. Someone who makes you look at your own life and you feel, yeah, this is what I want to do. And I want you to think about what is it about them that makes them so attractive or captures your imagination about them. So maybe you can just speak to the person next to you and tell them, who is it, that person you're inspired by, that you look up to, and what is it about them? What is that part of their character or life that is so attractive? Yeah? Give you a couple minutes to do that. Okay, so maybe you could share something with all of us. You don't have to name the person. If you want to, you can. And what is it about them that makes them so attractive? Begin with the ladies. Anyone would like to say? Don't be shy.
Scripture, and he can take out the essence of it, and he can explain it in a way which is way more than what I got from reading the same thing. I'm sure you all know who I'm talking about. And we kind of grew up together in Krishna consciousness, and to see him join the ashram, now taking sannyas, and just flying in his spiritual life, really gives me so much inspiration. And if my wife allows, then maybe I can follow your footsteps.
Nita Kirtan was in Saffron. You were in Saffron. I'm sure you've got that cloth saved somewhere.
No, she threw it all out.
She's giving you permission. That's a challenge. Anyone else? Please, just be free, whatever. It doesn't have to be a fixed thing, just name out a quality if you don't want to name a person. Yes?
The person practices what they preach, you can see they live and breathe what they say.
Yeah, someone who practices what they preach. In Sanskrit we say achar and prachar. One devotee used to say to me, if you have no achar, then your prachar, which means preaching, if you take the achar out, the prachar is just PR. PR is big business nowadays. You can do big in PR. You can spread ideas like anything. But what is the substance of it if there's no achar? So, achar, vachar, garaha, chaitanya, chaitanya. Thank you. Yes, anyone? Yeah.
Person I look up to is the reason why I'm here, Raj. Because he really takes care to look after each birdie and bring him to the association.
Raj. We're going to talk about this today, how everyone has there is a framework of ideal sadhachar, but within that there is individuality. I was thinking about this, you can't become like someone like Raj. Like Raj, Dhruv, Rishabh, they don't speak, they whisper. I don't think their voice ever goes above 30 decibels. When I'm having a conversation with Raj, I have to be right next to him. So I would also like to be like that, it's just so endearing, isn't it? But you can't imitate it. You can't be like that. They can't go above 30 decibels, and some people, they can't go below 80 decibels. Harsh is sitting in front of me. Everyone has their unique, but yes, very amazing. Anyone else?
Authenticity.
Yes. Wonderful. Authenticity is such an amazing one. One person, he was not sure about Prabhupada. Is this Swami the real McCoy? He wasn't sure. So what he did is he said, I'm going to follow him around. I'm going to drive him everywhere. And I'm going to observe him. Because you can, on a seat in front of a mic, you can get it, the big one. Trust me, I know. But then what do you do behind closed? So he followed Prabhupada for 7 days. At the end of it, he goes, this man is a sadhu. He's a saint. They said, how do you know? And his answer is profound. He said, I watched him morning to evening, day after day, interacting with everyone. And I saw that he was never trying to impress anyone. Interesting answer. If you ever come across someone who's so authentic, so genuine, so transparent, that they don't need to put on a show, they don't need to give it the big one, they don't need to put on a facade, they can just be who they are. There needs to be a certain amount of spiritual realization to do that. Because he was right there with Krishna, he could do that. So being authentic, we wish we could all be authentic all the time and not have to change ourselves because of insecurity or because we want appreciation or fame or whatever it may be. Thank you. Anyone else? Yes.
Sensitivity.
Yeah. Someone who's able to understand how others are feeling, that's such an empowering quality. Do you notice something about everything that was said here? Can anyone think of when I ask you something which captures your imagination about another person, all of you gave different answers. They're humble, they're authentic, they practice what they preach, they're sensitive, they make time for people. Do you notice one common element between all of those things? Yeah.
They're not physical. They're not physical qualities. They're more how someone is as a person.
They're not physical qualities. Can you tell me what would a physical quality be? Like their beauty or something.
Yeah.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, they're not physical things. They're not necessarily observable in that way. Yeah.
Okay. Is it service attitude?
Service attitude, there's a very deep sense of heart there,
They all have the common denominator of work and heaven, so all the qualities that they have is because they're genuinely loving for the world.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, love is behind work and heaven. So within saintliness or attractiveness of personality, there can be different emphases in different people's character, different elements. These are all true. But one thing that's very interesting is that none of you said something about another person which was to do with their achievements. Something to do with something amazing success that they had in the world. You know, Nitai Kirtan is an inspiration to me because he's a great speaker, for example. Not that you aren't a great speaker, but the point is that that's not what someone said. It wasn't your activity, it was the deeper character. It's very interesting that people value us more, or they remember us more for who we are than what we do. But the interesting thing is that people generally acknowledge us in the immediate for what we do. But they remember us in the long term. They remember us for generations for who we were as a person, for the quality, the substance of our character. Just like we had many days of glorification of Janakinath Prabhu. And it was very interesting because everyone was talking about his character, his qualities, his saintliness. It's not that he didn't do many things in the world. He did. He did many projects. He did many amazing tangible services. But what people remembered him for was his character. What we do is easy to measure. It's easy for the world to see. But who we are is sometimes more hard to measure. It's more intangible. The progress in that area of our internal life is not always easy to ascertain. What you do requires energy, for sure. Who you are requires deep introspection. And funnily enough, although introspection seems to be much easier than expending energy, it's actually a much harder energy to expend. We'll talk about this. What you do looks good to the outside. Who you are feels good on the inside. What I'm trying to show here is that it's not that what we do in the world is unimportant. We're all here. We're all trying to do something for Srila Prabhupada. We're all trying to do something to make the world a better place. We're all trying to do something to attract the attention of the acharyas and get their mercy. We are all trying to do these things. But sometimes in the process of doing all of these things, sometimes we can forget about or neglect all of these things. And what the Goswamis teach us is that if you don't have sadachar, if who you are as the substance of your character is not developing, then it doesn't matter how much you do. It doesn't even matter how much you know. You will not be able to enter into the deepest mysteries of bhakti if your character has not evolved to what Krishna and the Vaishnavas are attracted by. And so, we all have a to-do list, but how many of us have a to-be list? How many of us are really deeply meditating on our character qualities and can say that on a daily basis, I'm expending energy, time, effort, making serious plans how to become a better person? We often do this whole exercise of visualize your own funeral and see, try to picture in your mind what you would want someone to say in your eulogy. And then ask yourself in the last month, year, what have I done to actually become that person? The Goswamis are giving us deep insight into this. Things that can be counted don't always count. And things that can't be counted often count for more. In the world today, a lot of emphasis is put on competence, our skills, our abilities, our information, our ability to grasp a lot. But in the realms of spiritual life, the heart, devotion, love, wisdom, genuine vision, this actually counts for much, much, much more. So what the Goswamis do is through their writings, through not just their writings, but their example, is they teach us sadachar. Sadachar, you could say, in its most literal sense, means the best way to live. You can know tattva. you can grasp tattva intellectually, but you don't actually realize it just by an intellectual adjustment. You will not be able to understand philosophy just by reading books. You will not be able to understand philosophy just by argumenting, debating, and asking questions and answers. Ultimately, we realize spiritual truth not just by what we know intellectually, but through what we become in terms of the substance of our own character. And so, in, for example, Shastra, you'll find this whole kind of many, many verses given that knowledge in and of itself will not bear fruit. Krishna says, Vidya Vinaya Shampane Brahmane Gavihastini Suni Jeva Skapake Cha Pandita Samadarshina. You're going to become a pandit? It doesn't mean you just have Vidya. It means Vidya Vinaya Shampane. Vinaya means humility or gentleness. If you have knowledge but you have no humility, all of that knowledge doesn't make you a pandit. It won't actually transform the way you see life. It won't give you even an ability to see Krishna. Idam te na tapashkaya, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Idam te na tapashkaya. If you want to get knowledge, you also have to do tapasya. You have to do austerity. You have to be willing to give up immediate enjoyment and free space within the consciousness to actually allow that knowledge to come deeper into a part of your being. And then Krishna says in that same verse, Na bhaktaya kadachana. This knowledge will never be revealed to those who are na bhaktaya, not devoted. You've got to be devoted. You've got to actually engage in practical acts of love. Otherwise that knowledge won't go very, very far. Krishna again says in the Gita, Shraddhaval labhate jnanam. If you want to get jnanam, labhate means to gain. If you want to gain knowledge, Shraddhaval, you have to have faith. It's amazing how you can study knowledge for years and years, and if you don't actually have faith, that knowledge doesn't actually go in. You grasp it, but you don't grasp it. Because faith is the soil within which it has to be planted. And then what does Krishna say in the very next line? Tat parasham yatendriya. Indriya means the senses. So Krishna says, if you have knowledge, but you don't have sense control, then such knowledge will not go into a deep place within yourself. Later on in the fourth chapter, Krishna says, Tadvidi pranipadena parikrishnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninaskatpadashi. You want to learn? You want to learn spiritual science? Then all of these things, but one very important thing, sevaya. Unless you actually become a servant, unless you actually become ready and willing to sacrifice your own interests to serve a cause higher than yourself, you'll never really be able to get knowledge. So now, we talked about tattva. Yes, knowledge is important to understand reality, truth. But the Goswamis are taking it a step further and saying, unless you have sadachar, the necessary character, that knowledge will never turn into realization. Therefore, realization is known as vigyan. Vigata means intensified. Knowledge which has borne its mature fruit. And Krishna says, unless you get that realization, jnana vigyana driptatma bhuta sto vijitendriya yukta ittijate yogi samalostasma kanchana. Krishna says, you're only established in Krishna consciousness if you have knowledge and realization, and it's only that knowledge accompanied by realization, Triptatma, which will actually satisfy you. Knowledge in and itself, you can have so much, it won't satisfy you. But when you have knowledge and character, then knowledge and character together has its fruit. So what the Goswamis do is not just through their life, but through their teachings, they begin to explain what is the ideal character, what are the qualities which someone should imbibe. This delineation of 26 qualities of a devotee disappears in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's conversation with Sanatana Goswami. After Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visits Vrindavan, then he comes back to Jagannath Puri and he stops at two places. He stops at Prayag for 10 days and he instructs Rupa Goswami. And then he moves on to Varanasi. And in Varanasi for 2 months, he instructs Sanatana Goswami. And he explains many, many things. But one of the most important things he explains is the qualities that a devotee should have. Devotees are always merciful, humble, truthful, equal to all, faultless, magnanimous, mild, and clean. They are without material possessions, and they perform welfare work for everyone. They are peaceful, surrender to Krishna, and desireless. They are indifferent to material acquisitions and are fixed in devotional service. They completely control 6 bad qualities, lust, anger, greed, and so forth. They eat only as much as required. And they are not inebriated. They are respectful, grave, compassionate, and without false prestige. They are friendly, poetic, expert, and silent. Simple. Simple but not easy. These are the qualities that every single Vaishnava should be endeavoring to awaken. It's not stereotyped. Everyone is an individual in Krishna consciousness. So how each and every person exhibits their humility will not be identical. And you cannot change yourself overnight into being a different person. But what it means is that within the personality that Krishna has given you, these qualities have to begin pervading the way in which you interact with the world. And so you find in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes there are a variety of personalities. There's this amazing scene in Chaitanya Bhagavat where Advaita Acharya is 52 years older. He's 52 years older than Mahaprabhu. So he wants to be the servant of Mahaprabhu, but he's older. He knows that Mahaprabhu is God, so he wants to serve. But because he's older by age, Mahaprabhu is always respecting him. So he's doing everything he can to become a subordinate to Mahaprabhu, but nothing's working. And then he realizes, if I do one thing, Mahaprabhu will become angry, and then he'll treat me as a junior. So what does he do? He begins to speak Mayavada philosophy. If there's one thing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can't stand, it's impersonal philosophy. So in his home in Shantipur, he began expounding the glories of Mayavada. Mahaprabhu hears, he swims down the Ganga. He comes out of Shantipur, he bursts into the room. Advaita Acharya is on the Vyasasan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes. He goes straight up to Advaita Acharya, right in his face, and he says, can you tell me conclusively, once and for all, what is higher, bhakti or jnana? And Advaita Acharya looks right back at Mahaprabhu and says, jnana. Mahaprabhu goes into a fit of anger. He grabs hold of Advaita Acharya. He pulls him off the Vyasasan. He throws him onto the floor. He starts beating him, WWF style. Mahaprabhu is fuming. He's so angry. Mahaprabhu is absolutely fuming. Advaita Acharya is in complete ecstasy. He's so happy. Finally, I'm being treated as a junior. Advaita Acharya's wife, Sita Devi, is there. She's just crying because she's like, you're going to kill him. She's crying. Nityananda is dancing. And Haridas Thakur is behind Nityananda and he's chugging his rounds. It's very interesting. It's a very interesting scene of Chaitanya Bhagavat, because in this one scene, everyone is Krishna conscious. Everyone's Krishna conscious. But they're all complete individuals. The way in which they express their Krishna consciousness is not stereotyped. And that is a very, very important lesson for us to learn, that when we sometimes see these 26 qualities of the devotee, we think like, oh, do we all have to be this stereotype? No, be yourself. But within being yourself, deep within yourself, imbibe the spirit of being merciful towards others, being humble. And when we see in the lives of the Goswamis, they embody these qualities like anything, so humble. There was one Digvijay Pandit, his name was Rupa Narayan Saraswati. So he wanted to be like, he was definitely the one giving it the big one. Right? He wanted to be the best philosopher, and in order to do that, he had to defeat anyone who was getting any sense of reputation. So he heard through the ethers that Rupa and Sanatan, amazing philosophers. So he came to the area where they were staying. And he said, I heard you all are great philosophers, Rupa Sanatan, so why don't you debate me? Why don't you debate me? Then I'll defeat you, and once I've defeated you, then I will have my crowning glory as the greatest philosopher that the world has seen. So Rupa and Sanatan just looked at him and said, why do you want to debate with us? We're nothing. We don't know anything. It's not going to do anything for your reputation. He said, okay, you're scared. I can see you're scared. So then just sign the Vijaya Patra, the certificate that I've defeated you. They said, yeah, no problem, we'll sign it. And he went away. And as he was walking away, he heard again in the ethers that, no, there's another upcoming philosopher. Jiva Goswami. So he said, okay, let's kill all the birds in one stone. Let's do him over as well. So they went to Jiva Goswami. When Jiva Goswami heard, he said, Rupa Narayan said, let's debate. Jiva Goswami also was not so interested. He said, all of you guys, Rupa Narayan looked at him and said, all of you guys, you're scared of me. Jiva Goswami said, what do you mean, all of you guys? He said, no, Rupa Sanatan already defeated them. He said, what are you talking about? How you can defeat Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis? They're the greatest philosophers. He said, no, look, here's the certificate. So Jiva Goswami looked and he realized that out of humility, Rupa and Sanatan didn't even want to debate with him, so they just signed it off. And Jiva Goswami saw him and he saw he was so proud. Jiva Goswami says, you're a fool. They are the greatest philosophers, but out of their humility, they didn't want to debate with you. And to prove it, I am just their humble student. I'll debate with you, and I'll wipe the floor with you. And I'll show you that I'm nothing compared to them. And if I can beat you, what they could have done, they could have annihilated you. So Jiva Goswami began debating with them. Finished him off. Completely finished him off. Then news reached Rupa and Sanatan that Jiva had defeated Rupa Narayan. Rupa said, bring him here, bring Jiva here. So Jiva came and Rupa looked at him and said, how you could debate? Why did you debate with him? Jiva said, I was protecting your honor, I was protecting your glory, I was protecting your reputation. Rupa said, you have shown pride in your character. The goal of life is not to be right. The goal of life is not to win. The goal of life is not to establish your superiority over others. Clearly, Jiva, you have some pride which is residing in your heart. Therefore, you're not qualified to live in Vrindavan. And Rupa said, out. Leave Vrindavan. No one can live in Vrindavan who has a touch, an ounce of pride within their heart. So he banished Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami went to the edge of Vrindavan. He stayed just in. You've got to stay in Vrindavan, you know. That's the only hope. So he stayed right on the edge in the Krura Ghat, and he stayed in the crocodile hole. And in a crocodile hole, he just began intensely chanting, repenting, wondering, oh, I made a mistake, I showed some pride. And then later on, Sanatan came to Rupa and he said, where's Jiva? He said, Jiva, I banished him. Sanatan said, no, you were this. You have enunciated so many principles, but you are not following your own principles. Rupa said, what do you mean I'm not following the principles? He said, look at what... Name all the principles. So Sanatan began naming and then he said, Nam Kirtan. Rupa said, I'm following that. Bhagavad Shravan. He said, I'm following that. Jiva Daya. You should have compassion to all the souls. You should have compassion to Jiva. He said, Rupa, you're not following. So then Rupa called Jiva Goswami back. Of course, there are many levels to this pastime. It's not that Jiva made a mistake. Jiva was doing it selflessly, but still it was there to show that not an ounce of pride can remain within the heart if one actually wants to experience all of these things. So we need to look very, very closely at these qualities and understand how to imbibe them in our lives. There were some exercises, but I think because we're short of time, what's the time? 10:30? It's 10:30, yeah? What time we? What time should we finish?
Pack.
Oh man, I do this every time. Okay, 10 minutes, I'll do 10 minutes. So we'll do this another time, but this is like how to actually understand how to relevantly actually apply these qualities. Because sometimes what we do is we neglect the quality. Sometimes we may think that we're actually imbibing that quality, but we don't do it in the actual way it should be done. And there's a truly authentic way in which to apply these qualities. So maybe another time we can do these exercises. So we look at all of the qualities and we can see different things. So I just want to share one other final thing with you on the Goswamis and their character, which I think is astounding, and I think is very, very important. The Goswamis seem to have these extremes in their character, but somehow or other they draw all of these extremes together. And because they were able to factor in aspects of character that sometimes seem very, very opposite, and that a normal person wouldn't be able to accommodate, because they were able to accommodate both aspects, they actually exhibited the most shining character of Krishna consciousness. I'll explain what I mean. In Krishna consciousness, we're encouraged to be enthusiastic and greedy. Tatralolyam apimulyam ekalam, Shastra says that the only prize for Krishna consciousness is the greed. Faith and the greed. Can you think of a seemingly opposite quality that's required to be successful in spiritual life that sometimes is may feel difficult to reconcile with being enthusiastic and greedy?
Being satisfied.
Being satisfied with what you have.
Patience.
Being patient.
Selfless.
Being selfless, yeah. Simultaneously, we have to be patient and consistent. And what often happens is that we tend to go one extreme or the other and we don't factor in both aspects in the way we behave and practice Krishna consciousness. In Krishna consciousness, we said that one of the most important things is to give to others. Right? Like here, it was said that book is there. What do you think is seemingly an opposite aspect to that, which is just as important?
Filling your own cup first.
Invest in yourself. Sometimes people focus on this to the neglect of this, and sometimes they focus on this to the neglect of this. The Goswamis were doing both. Sometimes we're told in Krishna consciousness, you must find your dharma. You must find, that's important, isn't it? Unless you're in your dharma, how you will be able to function for a long time? Can you think of an opposite aspect or seemingly opposite thing that is just as important as engaging in your dharma? You've done this with me before. Have you not? No, she can't answer. Ready to do whatever is required. But if you go to one extreme or the other, you miss the. You're gonna get injured. But somehow or other, someone who's ready to do both, they get every aspect of mercy. Sometimes we can also be in Krishna consciousness, no Prabhu, I can't do that service. It's not my dharma. Then you miss out. In Krishna consciousness, we're trying to expand our influence. We're trying to expand our service. Prabhupada said, my disease is that I can't think small. I'm always thinking big. What's seemingly an opposite to that, which is equally important, which can be reconciled in the life of a deep devotee? Any ideas? Do you mean your service?
Do what's in your capacity.
Do what's in your capacity? Yeah, these are all true, these are.
Attention to detail.
We're also trying to go in the back. It's amazing, isn't it? As a devotee, you're trying to do more and go in the front to basically, give it to the world. But at the same time, internally, you're trying to become lower than the straw in the street, go in the back, be completely insignificant. How do you do both? The devotee can do it. This is the kind of character which is going to give you the benefit of everything. In Krishna consciousness, we're trying to aim for perfection, right? You've got to have your North Star. You've got to know what's the ultimate place you're trying to go. But what's the simultaneous thing that you also have to do? Know your next step. You've got to focus on progress. You've got to think you may die tomorrow. This dog. Addiction. At the same time, what do you have to do? Say it louder.
Believe you live tomorrow.
Believe you live tomorrow. That's how you call it, yeah.
Plan for the future.
Plan for the future, yeah. Plan for a lifetime. If you only do one of these, you're going to miss out on something. Somehow or other, you've got to accommodate both things. You've got to be childlike and innocent. But at the same time, what do you have to be?
Mature.
Mature. Say
Lala. Mature.
Mature.
Bold.
Bold.
Expert.
Streetwise and mature. You've got to be ambitious for results. But at the same time, you have to be
detached
from results. You have to be strict on rules and regulations. At the same time, spontaneous,
compassionate.
The understanding, compassionate. Seek the essence. You have to understand what's the essence of it and adjust if you need to. Otherwise, niyamagraha. Goswami talks about this. You have to be dependent on devotees. You have to feel, without the devotees, I can't do it. Eka kiya mar, nahi paya bal, harinam sankirtane. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, eka kiya mar, alone, nahi paya bal, I have no strength. At the same time, what do you have to do? You have to learn to fly your own plane.
To become self-sufficient.
Goswamis had this complete amazing, they were so bold, but they were so humble. They could preach to kings, but at the same time they could relate to the pauper on the street. They were so deep, they were in the spiritual world, but they were so human and relatable. They used to go around the villages and just speak to all the families, oh, how's your son, and how's your daughter, and how's the health of your father, and you think, these guys are like in the spiritual world, what are they worried about all this stuff for? They were so transcendental, so tender and down to earth. They were so learned. Sometimes you meet someone who's so learned, they can't have a conversation with a normal person. Look at this poetry they were writing. But at the same time, they could just relate to anyone. Just see, amazing character. So when we study the life of the Goswamis, what you begin to understand is the richness of character that comes through spirituality. The biggest project, along with all of the projects that we're doing in order to change the world, the biggest project, and the project which, if you conquer this project, every other project will work out, is the project on yourself. The project to change your own character. The project to actually become a pure devotee of Krishna. The project to actually develop sadhacharya as the most natural and spontaneous exhibition of the way you function in this world. But of course, there are many obstacles that we have to overcome in order to do that. Anyway, I'm not going to even open up this slide, because otherwise we're going to definitely go way over time. So, I guess we'll carry on. No, because others have sessions.
No, next is the services start at 11.
Okay, I'll just say this very quickly, and then you just take one or two questions and stop. Okay, so why don't we change? Why? Sometimes we think, I can't change. I am who I am. I'll never be able to become the saintly person that's talked about in scriptures. First thing is that we have to realize character is important. You're never going to change if we don't realize that changing our character is the most important, one of the most important things we have to do in our life. We're never going to change if we think our character is fine, okay, therefore, fine at the moment. Therefore, we have to do a lot of introspection. We have to have feedback. We've got to be observing ourselves. We've got to know, how are other people perceiving my presence? How are other people feeling when they're around me? I have a certain conception of who I am, but how do other people perceive me? You know, we have to understand what aspects of our character do we have to change. We have to overcome the block that we think, I can't change my character. Some people think my qualities are just so ingrained I won't be able to change. You won't necessarily be able to change your personality. You have a certain swabhav that may be there. But the anartas which make that swabhav come out in ways which are proud, ways which are violent, ways which are harsh, that doesn't have to be there. You can be who you are and still be humble, merciful, compassionate, truthful, so on and so forth. And it can all be done because the process of Krishna consciousness is stronger than any of your conditionings. We have to overcome this kind of conception that my character will change automatically. If I chant Hare Krishna, I'll become a pure devotee. If I read Bhagavatam, I'll become a pure devotee. I don't have to focus on it. I don't have to try for it. I don't have to work on it. It will just happen automatically. And we have to have the bravery and courage to look at ourselves and say, I'm going to work on it. I'm going to face it. And I'm going to become the best version of myself. So this is what the Goswamis gave to us. They were teaching. It's not just about knowledge, but it's actually about becoming a person of ideal character. And knowledge with character really awakens the deepest experience of Krishna consciousness. And so these were
some points to share with you today. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.
Firstly, thank you for the great talk. Secondly, in terms of the alternating characteristics we went through, how have you got any advice for us to accommodate in any way we can? Because it can be hard to balance. It's very conflicting.
Yeah, so how do we actually develop these things? What you have to do is you have to have activities in your life which help to nurture both sides. You have to have people in your life who remind you of both sides. And you have to make time in your life for both sides. So I think if you do this, if you do these three things, you have specific activities which nurture both sides. Like I have people, I have friends in Krishna consciousness who nurture a very specific part. Usually one part of this. And then I have others who nurture another side. That's not to say that each one of those don't have both sides, but according to their personality and how I connect with them, they, like for example, you can hear lectures, and certain lecturers will emphasize certain things, and they will emphasize one aspect of this. Actually, that's just how it is. So then you can listen to lectures, so I have all these different, you know. Like you can listen to someone like, for example, Gaur Govinda Swami. I don't know if you've listened to Gaur Govinda Swami, but he's incredible, right? And he can nurture like one aspect of your spirit, not one, many aspects, but a specific. And then you have some. Then another person I may listen to is someone like Hridayananda Maharaj, who is very different, but who nurtures a whole different other aspect of my approach to Krishna consciousness. And that's the beauty of the Krishna consciousness movement, that we have all these activities, all these facilities, all these personalities who can help you to develop such an amazing character of all of these aspects. So if you make time for it, you do activities, and you have people, that can happen. The previous slide?
So if we ourselves are criticized, or if we think someone else has a particular mindset of us, is it our responsibility to rectify that? Or is it someone else's? Or how that
just repeat it again. If someone has a...
If someone that criticizes us directly, or if someone has a particular view set about a character that we think is incorrect, is it our responsibility to correct them? Or is it someone else's? Or do we kind of just...
It all depends on your relationship with them, on what's going to be progressive. If you're trying to correct them because they have an incorrect conception of you, then you're correcting them for their benefit, not for your benefit. That should be the mood of a devotee. And if you're doing it for their benefit, then you've got to ask yourself, am I the right person? Is this the right time? You know, will they be able to hear it from in this way? So then you have to make the calculation and then do whatever is the best way to do it. So, yeah, whenever you're giving any sense of feedback, ask yourself, am I the right person? Do I have the right motive? Is this the right time? Is there a better way? These are questions you have to ask. And the other thing is, from the pastimes of Chaitanya Charitamrita or Bhagavatam, you have to understand that every pastime is emphasizing a certain point. So, like say for example, Mahaprabhu, the devotees tell Mahaprabhu that King Prachaparudra wants to see you. So Mahaprabhu is like, I'll never see a king. I'm a renunciate. Niskinchanasya Bhagavat Bhajanam Mukhasya is worse than drinking poison to be associating with a worldly person. So he refuses, point blank. But then the same Mahaprabhu goes to a secluded place at the river Godavari and has days of conversation with Ramananda Rai, where he's actually hearing from the governor. So that seems a bit contradictory. But the idea is that in every pastime, a specific point is being made. In the pastime of Ramananda Rai, the point that's being made is never judge someone on the externals. In the pastime of Pachaparudra, the point that's being made is be careful of materialistic association. So in any given pastime, even with this jiva pastime, we just take the point. The point is there that be humble. Don't try and do a one-upsmanship on others. The whole bigger picture is that jiva didn't do anything wrong. So we should just understand that, the context of that.
You know, when you put the slide up on the 26 qualities, it was interesting to see that most of them were internal, but one of them was actually an external, it felt like an external thing, which was the welfare work for everyone. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, there could be others, even like not eating too much. That's also an external one, right? Others have an external dimension. Cleanliness has an external dimension. So, poetic is also okay. That's an external manifestation of something. So there is an external and an internal, and we realize in Krishna consciousness both are going hand in hand. That you see, a devotee, it's part of the ornaments of their character. Some of those ornaments are also external, because they're there externally in order to attract others, in order to educate others, in order to establish glory of the devotees in a very visual way, in a very perceivable way. So therefore, it's not just an internal thing where you see the character of the devotee. There will also be very external things that they do which reveal to everyone else in the world that they are who they are. And therefore, even in the Gita, when you see that Krishna repeatedly is talking about the characteristics of the self-realized soul, at the end of chapter 2, in chapter 12, in chapter 13, in chapter 16, all these passages where he's talking about the qualities, and sometimes they're very internal and sometimes they're external. What does Arjuna say to Krishna in the second chapter? How does a self-realized person walk? How do they talk? What is their mindset? So he's explaining that there's an internal life and there's a very observable external life, and both things are important.
When I look at the 26 qualities, like some of them stand out to me as I know how to practically do that one. If I know I need to become more clean or silent or not inebriated, it's that practical thing. I feel like there's a process to develop that quality in a sense. But some of them seem like to me like I will only become more humble or merciful or equal to all when I develop some sort of spiritual depth. But in the last slide you had, we are changed because we think my character will change automatically in the process. So is it the fact that we can develop some of these qualities actively rather than depending on chanting Hare Krishna? And how?
That's a good question. In the stage of a sadhaka, we are cultivating these qualities in order to empower our spiritual practice, attract blessings, avoid aparad, and connect to Krishna. Once we're connected to Krishna, these gifts actually come as a perfectional blessing from Krishna. So there is humility which is in the stage of cultivation, and there is humility which is in the stage of perfection. And therefore, humility is, just taking that as an example, is relevant for a sadhaka and a siddha. A siddha is having humility by dint of their purity, that's a gift from Krishna. And a sadhaka is cultivating humility through a conscious competence of trying to act in that way in order to avoid aparad, to avoid sin, to avoid the flow of their heart towards Krishna. And so, it is relevant. All of these qualities are relevant at all stages of someone's spiritual journey. And in terms of how to actually cultivate them, well, one way you can look at it is it becomes very apparent when we are in situations where we don't exhibit these qualities. So, like, say we're talking about how do I develop humility? What is the means to do that? One just has to become introspective. Every single day there are situations, interactions where clearly we could have been more humble. We could have made more progression by taking the lower position, but we didn't. And so it's just about becoming conscious in all our interactions and all our situations that we encounter, where and how we can apply these qualities and bring them into reality. So it's not necessarily a process like I'm going to do A, B, C, D, and E to become humble. It's just about it's about instilling in your consciousness that humility is part of my mission statement, it's my to-be list. And then when it becomes so prominent in your mind, then at every turn in life, you're looking for opportunities or you're aware of opportunities where you can begin to apply that and cultivate that. Because it's become important to you. Just tell me when to stop. Stop.
Yeah, on that point about sort of introspection, how do you tell the difference between introspection and mental speculation? How can we make sure that actually a genuine act that captures sort of introspection rather than just like from the heart rather than like just mental speculation?
Yeah. You could do this. You could do a whole table like speculation, introspection. There could be many, many ways to figure it out. Speculation means you're thinking about something with reference to your own mind and senses. Introspection means you're thinking about something with reference to Guru Sadhu Shastra. If there's no Guru Sadhu Shastra in the equation, know for sure it's speculation. Okay? Speculation means you're thinking and thinking with no plan of action. Introspection means you're thinking, but it's coming to some kind of tangible plan that you're going to do something with at the end of the day. Speculation generally is about things that you may not have a power over. Maybe the past, or it may be something out of your circle of influence. Introspection tends to focus on those things which you can actually do something about and change. So you could go on like this, there are probably many more. You know very quickly, am I spending a lot of time speculating or introspecting? Prabhupada said a devotee should be as introspective as a materialist is speculative. So it's just flipping it. It's flipping that tendency to be speculative and bringing it within a spiritual arena with spiritual parameters, then you dovetail that capacity to want to think. Does that make sense?
Thank you for the lecture, it was really good. I want to ask, how do you create a balance of having like sufficient self-love and not getting walked over versus being like thinking of yourself as low and destroying the truth? How do you create that balance?
Yeah, this question is often coming, that how do we know our humility doesn't become like low self-esteem? The key difference is that humility is always in relation to the greatness of Krishna. Low self-esteem is just, I'm small. A devotee is becoming humble because they're looking at Krishna and they're thinking how great Krishna is, how great the devotees are, and you know what? I'm connected to them. So they're vision of the devotees and the glory of Krishna is growing, and in comparison they're feeling themselves to be so small. But at the same time, they know I'm connected. So there's great hope and happiness. So that's how you become humble, in the sense of becoming small, but full of hope, because you think, I'm connected to them. It's amazing. Krishna is amazing. I'm really small, but I'm connected to Krishna. And by being connected to Krishna, anything can change. But when you have so low self-esteem, you're just like, I'm terrible, I'm bad, and there's nothing else around that's going to help me. And that is destructive. So, humility, real humility, comes from genuine appreciation of Krishna. Because when you genuinely appreciate Krishna and the devotees, you become humble, but in a happy way.
Yeah, I had one question. You know, you spoke about there's a common theme about externalities and also about internals. We normally speak about Vaishnava etiquette, and a common theme that we're seeing in the personalities that you mentioned is that they uphold this Vaishnava etiquette, these rules and regulations, which maybe for some of us we might find extreme, a little bit too much, especially from like a modern era. So I just wanted to ask you, probably on behalf of everyone, like how we can harmonize these Vaishnava etiquette practices in a way that's fruitful for our Krishna consciousness, because it seems that we need to have this to some extent so that we can be able to perceive the spiritual realities.
I mentioned this on one of the slides, that we have to be strict about rules and regulations, and at the same time we have to understand and adjust to grasp the essence. Rupa Goswami says you can go off the road on both sides. You can go off the road by clinging on to rules and regulations and codes of etiquette fanatically without understanding the purpose behind them. And you can go off the road by saying, I don't need to follow them, it's not so important, times have moved on. You can go off the road on both sides. So bhakti is a living theology. It's always evolving. It's always connecting to the time in the world. It's not a museum of teachings. It's a living theology. And so in every situation, in every time, place and circumstance, devotees and communities have to do their own introspection to say, have we got the right balance between following the rules and regulations and grasping the essence? Have we gone off towards one extreme or the other? And it's kind of like riding a bike. You have to constantly just adjust and make sure you've got the right thing. So, yeah, there are etiquettes, there are codes of conduct, there are ways to live, there are boundaries which shouldn't be transgressed. And those have to be honored, but at the same time we have to make sure that we're honoring them in a way that brings us to the essence. Otherwise we do it just for the sake of it and it doesn't really help. And it can become suffocating. When you follow rules and regulations and you're actually grasping the essence, you'll never feel the rules and regulations to be suffocating. But when you're following a rule and regulation and it's not taking you to the essence, you will feel, this is like handcuffs. So that's why we always have to have the vision of why I'm doing this, where this is going and how it's going to help me, and feel that benefit. Finish there. Thank you so much. Apologies for going over time. Srila Prabhupada.